Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Simone Tadour with my co-host, Christine DiDomenico, and today we have Diva Diaz. And the title of our show today is Abilities versus Disabilities, the New X-Men. Now, I'm just going to sort of gloss over the summary here, but basically, Diva works in a very different way using the Access Consciousness tools with all those places that we thought were disabilities or they were wrong or all of that stuff. And one of the questions she asks is, what is different about you and what is the strongness of you? And she is an international speaker. She's spoken all over the world, which means she's international. We are going to be looking at what has been labeled as disabled and where they might actually be abilities. And it's funny because I was just, you know, reading this today, and I realized when I was in teacher's college, we had this special education course, and I remember looking at this very thing going, well, I wonder, like, what if they're, like, actually, like, these abilities that nobody's recognized? And, you know, they're sort of, like, undercover. And then, like, I don't know, probably 2 or 3 years later, I came across Access and this idea of X-Men and them actually being possibly abilities rather than disabilities. So another bit about Diva, she's traveled the world, and I was fortunate enough to meet her while she was on this sojourn into the Middle East, and we had some adventures there, working with heads of state, ministers of government, blue chips, CEOs in Africa, Eastern Europe, and the Middle East, Asia, and Latin America. So she is a globetrotter, this woman. So without further ado, hello, Diva. And hopefully she's still there.
Hello. Oh, oh my goodness. Sorry, I thought that was another caller dialing in. So I was like, hello. Oh. Hi, you guys. Thank you for having me on.
Great to have you here, Diva.
We are excited about this show with you.
Thank you.
So, Diva, tell us a little bit about yourself, because I know you have a story behind all of this and how you grew up. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's really funny because I was just remembering the other day that I was in Italy a couple of years ago, and I was at this center for kids with autism, and you know, it was this amazing cultural place where they organized all these activities, and the director of this place had asked to see me. You know, she was interested in the Access Consciousness tools and the work we were doing. And when I walked in, she was like, you know, so what are you? Are you like a doctor or something? You know, she wanted like this official thing. And I looked at her and I said, no, you know what? I'm not a doctor, but I grew up surrounded by the labels of disability in many different ways. And it's something that I just lived with every day to the point where I actually thought this was just the way that a lot of people functioned, you know, like with OCD, ADD, ADHD, paranoid schizophrenia, like all of these things were like my daily life. And I was expected to, you know, I was expecting that she was going to say, get out of my office, you need to have all these qualifications. But she smiled and she looked at me and she said, well, you know what, that is so much better because you have firsthand experience. And that for me was a huge gift because I realized that actually what I was bringing to the table was really talking about what it's like in the daily life and, you know, the way that I've always approached these different labels of disability and then adding the Access Consciousness tools to that, you know, like what that could bring. So yeah, that was kind of like my initiation into the whole world of these amazing things that are abilities. And yeah.
So cool. Well, it's funny. Mm-hmm. I just yesterday met a young guy who, I mean, he's just a kid to me, and we were chatting and stuff like that. And his mother opened up to me later, and she's like, yeah, actually, he's having to go to a new school because the school that he was in, you know, he was mislabeled and blah, blah, blah. And he is autistic, but she said he has, you know, if he gets stressed, he freaks out or he hides. And then if people get angry, he just gets worse. And I thought, wow, like how many kids are out there that, you know, could use these tools that could make their lives so much easier, whether it's finding a new school or using the tools to have ease with the school they're in. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, what you do with parents and kids and or adults to cope with life and actually thrive?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and the way that I look at it too is, you know, how do you apply these tools to people in general? Because we were all kids at one point, and at some point all of the kids that we work with are then adults. So how do we really empower everybody with tools that you can apply in every area of your life, whether it's in school, with your family, in relationships, and then moving forward, going into work, work life itself. So one of the main things that I always really, really like to kind of put a lot of attention on is just how aware these kids and adults actually are, which sounds like a very kind of interesting random statement that may not mean very much, but when you start to actually unpack it, you know, we've all been told, you know, at some point that maybe we're oversensitive to something, or, you know, even a lot of these kids that are labeled, they may be very sensitive, quote unquote, to sound, to light, to different things. And what Access has discovered is that actually it's a perception that goes beyond the five senses. It really is a lot more the way that maybe like a baby function. I'm not talking in terms of IQ here at all. I'm just talking in terms of like sensory awareness. In terms of like how a baby will kind of like, you know, start crying perhaps if the mother's super stressed. Or they will have a sense of peace and calm if they're out in nature. That kind of awareness and response to their surroundings is something that a lot of the people that have been labeled with different disabilities have, which sounds like, okay, great, that's lovely. But when you really look at it, how many, you know, of the systems that we're currently working with, whether it's education or even, you know, like all the parenting techniques that you're given on how you should deal with your child that's been labeled, how many of those actually do create that sense of peace and ease, like when you're in nature, and how many of them actually have a lot of force or stress behind them or a lot of kind of like worry, energy and vibes. And so these kids are actually picking up on that all the time because their first language really is a lot more energetic. To them, words don't really mean the same thing that they do to us. So just starting to look at how they receive information from a far bigger picture, which includes all the different like sensorial experiences, if you like, that is a huge way to start to have ease in communicating with them, but in also showing them what it is that they're receiving information-wise so that they don't go into, like, the overwhelm so easily, so that they do start to get that they're not the ones that are messed up and it's actually just their perception of their environment a lot of the times that they're aware of.
Yeah, I mean, I know for myself that was huge. I mean, we've had quite a few discussions about this, and I'm like, wow, I'm not wrong. Oh, my God, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Particularly about like the sensory overload and
Well, and that's the thing, and because it's something that seems.
Hello.
I think we lost her.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh no!
Yeah,
can you hear me?
We got you again. Yep.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's one of those things that kind of seems to creep up and it's just like you're there in the middle of sensory overload. I think part of it is that it's not very easy to figure out where it's coming from or why it's shown up, which is where we get trapped with all of this because there's so much of trying to figure out what caused it, what it is, how do we stop it, how do we prevent it, rather than actually asking the question, which will allow us to open like a different door, basically, to a different perspective, a different possibility. And really, questions are the key tools for dealing with anybody that's been labeled with any kind of disability, because you start to empower the person to access their awareness of what they know, what's true for them, and what they're, you know, what's going on in their world, rather than imposing on them, you know, any ideas of what needs to be fixed. And, you know, nobody likes being fixed. They know what you mean when
no.
you say, okay, you're so special, you know, like, so really just starting
yeah.
to kind of, it's like a slight shift in perspective, but actually it's gigantic, because it's really taking it away from the conclusion of what it is and into the question of, okay, what's truly going on? Like, what are you perceiving here? What are you aware of?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Christine.
I was going to ask the same question. Simone and I often, before the show, on the same day, have things come up in our lives that match the conversation we have on our show, and that exactly happened today. My son is 25. We went into first a small store where he was fine. You know, we went into an appliance store. Then we went into this big Lowe's, big home improvement store, and he has such he's sensing something in there that's really making him uncomfortable, dizzy, wobbly on his feet. So what are some questions that he can ask to and that we can give to people that would give
yeah.
him more awareness around that?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that question. The first, like, kind of go-to question that I always recommend is, what are you perceiving? So in this case, he would ask himself, what am I perceiving? Now, this seems like, okay, it's just a random question. What could possibly shift? But what you're looking at here is not trying to get the answer, not trying to figure it out, but really actually getting a sense of the energy that's behind it, of like, okay, I'm perceiving something that is not logical right now. I'm perceiving perhaps somebody who's really stressed out in the room, or I'm perceiving, you know, whatever that may be. And by asking that question, what you start to do is they start to get a sense of, oh, this isn't actually my feeling. This isn't my emotion necessarily. It's also perhaps not even my thought. These are literally just awarenesses of different vibrations, different energies. And by asking, okay, what am I perceiving? You're taking it away from being something that belongs to them that they have to fix. And you're actually going, oh, okay, I'm perceiving the wind. It's a really windy day. I am not necessarily the wind, so I cannot fix myself from being so windy, but I can acknowledge that the reason my hair is flapping all over the place is because there's a huge wind on at the moment, you know, and I'm kind of making it silly, but you know, it takes it away from being a problem and saying to them, hey, you can actually take control of this. Like, your awareness doesn't have to control you. You can actually be the one that is in charge and can go, okay, what question can I ask here? What am I perceiving? What am I aware of? Mm-hmm. What do I know here that I'm pretending not to know? And again, these questions really are actually designed to bypass the logical mind, because quite frankly, if any of this stuff was logical, we would all already have a way to be dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really looking at the energy
yep.
that's behind it. Because, you know, we are beings that experience so much more than just the things that we can see in front of our eyes. And these kids and adults are super aware. They're super hyper aware. And that truly is a huge capacity. It's just that nobody tells you how to deal with it or what to do with it. So, yeah, starting off with that question, I would say, would be the first thing. But you both work a lot with kids, too. Like, what other questions do you go to?
I find that I tend to use the exercise where you expand out, both for myself as well as the kids that I work with, so
I
that there is
that yeah.
really, really, yeah, big space. And I find that actually I'm doing more and more horse riding, and so being that space of that horse actually gets me to practice, like, the actually huge awareness that they are willing to be all the time.
Nice.
And I just find that gives them a little a little more space, a little more, you know, way of being them, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true for me too. I use that a lot, and what I have found is kids in school and at home are being told to focus. They're shrinking themselves so much with focusing, and often kids will say, "I need to pay more attention." You know, they give me the lines that they've been given, and so I just ask them, well, you know, what if you get bigger? Does that feel lighter for you? And so that they can be here with what they're doing and be wherever else they're aware of. And that's really given kids a lot more freedom and space to, like Simone said, to be them. So it's very different.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I really love that. And the part that I
go ahead.
I think I have like a half a second delay. But I was just going to say, like, the part of that I really love is that all of these tools, they're literally designed to create more space and more peace in your world and in the world of the person who's using the tools. And so again, it's not really even about finding the one tool. It's like, use a tool, and if it doesn't create that space, then go to the next tool, go to the next question until you get that, because there is no right or wrong way of doing it. And I think so much of what we're told is like, this is the way to do it, and when this happens, do this, and when this happens, ask that. And you know, we're all so different, and even all of these kids that are labeled are so different, even within the labels themselves, they're so different. You know, so just really being aware of that and following exactly what's going on each time, and being very present with it, like you both were saying as well, is such a key thing.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that came up yesterday actually was, you know, that as teachers, well, and as parents too, I guess, like, we often assume so much. And just taking the time to explain to the kid, because it might not make sense to them. Like, I had this kid who was doing English, and he's like, why do I have to give the information to the teacher? Like, why can't they just read the book?
Yeah.
I was like, well, unfortunately, this is the way it works, and these are the things that you have to do to get where you'd like to go. And what if we can make it easy? And what if you're way faster than most of your teachers? And once he was able to go, oh, yeah, I am. Okay. Then he was fine with doing the work.
Yeah. I love that, though, because it's so true. We do just say things and we assume, or as adults, you know, like, a lot of people also talk in subtext. So they will say something and there'll be 25 hidden messages behind that one line. And for someone that's been labeled, those things aren't so clear, especially when what you're saying doesn't really match what's coming out of your mouth, like what you're communicating energetically doesn't match the words that you're saying. They are going to be so confused by that. So the more you can be very, very present with them and actually, like you're saying, Simone, really be clear in what you're communicating and also include the bigger picture. Yeah. You know, I mean, we're so used to saying things like, hey, will you grab my handbag, or will you pass me the keys, or can you put on your shoes, which is just a clear instruction. And to somebody, for example, with autism, that actually makes absolutely no sense, because they function from a far more spherical awareness, not a linear awareness or a linear reality, which means that, A, it's amazing because they can fit a lot more information in that awareness, and B, it also means that they do require more information from you. So actually saying to them, hey, can you pass me my handbag so that we can actually get to the car and go out and go to the shops and then come back and then make dinner? That's going to make so much more sense than these one-off comments. And I mean, I've been diagnosed myself with autism spectrum disorder. In the older days, it would have been high-functioning autism, but that was always one of the things that was really confusing to me, particularly in business and in relationships of any kind, friendships, whatever. When people would give out small snippets of information, it was always so difficult for me to understand unless they would give me the big picture. So even though it may not all be relevant to them, even though you may think they don't need to know it. Just try it out. see if it does make a difference.
Yeah. I know I was guilty of it the other day, this weekend, actually. My boyfriend is also on the spectrum, so we're kind of funny together because we have different attributes. And so he was making me dinner, and he said, how much do you want? And I picked up a bowl, and I said, I would like this much. And I held the bowl like, you know, that's as much as I want. And he's like, so two of those. I said, yeah, for one of us, for one each. And then he took that to mean two helpings of that particular bowl for each of us. So I ended up with this mountain of pasta. And I was like, what is going on? But I wasn't clear. And so he,
Yeah, absolutely. It's very interesting because it's a bit like you were saying, Christine, as well. Like when we're telling kids, and we've been telling ourselves every day, like, I need to focus on this, or you need to finish this one thing before you complete the next. How much information are you actually cutting out by doing that? I mean, if it's working for you, great, continue doing it. And if it's not working for you, you might want to just include more in that. Like, I found that the kids that, you know, I've worked with kids where I've been like, okay, how fast can you do your homework? And how many pieces of homework can you work on at the same time? And they've literally been doing up to 5 bits of homework on different subjects at the same time for fun, like laughing hysterically because it then becomes a game, seeing how fast they can do it. And it gets completed so quickly. So it really can be a case of, you know, everything is the opposite of what it appears to be in terms of if you think you're really slow, or your child is really slow, maybe ask some questions. Maybe ask, okay, are they really slow, or is there a different speed that they function at? And what can we put in place to actually get them to function at that speed with more ease?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I find that.
Go ahead.
I find that the kids that I've worked with and their parents are trying to get them to fit the mold that they know. And so these questions are really great because it gets them to think outside the box that we've been trained to want our kids to fit in when they don't fit in that at all. It's really gives them so much more freedom.
Yeah.
So I wonder what other questions we can give to parents to get them to start looking outside the box. And that they're not wrong, too. I think a lot of parents are just wanting to have something different for their kids and not knowing how to get there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. That is such a huge topic. I mean, even just getting out of judgment is probably like the biggest topic ever.
Yeah.
On planet Earth. And particularly in the area of parenting. I mean, I'm not a parent myself, but I, you know, work with a lot of parents, and obviously I have parents too, and you know, just seeing the amount of kind of guilt and regret that they go through on, like, are they doing enough? Could they have done better? But even if you're willing to, for a second, just, you know, there's a great tool, which is interesting point of view, that I have this point of view. If you're willing to say that to yourself in your head or out loud, you know, if you want to freak people out, that's okay too. But whenever you find that you're judging yourself, and starting to head down that spiral of just, like, you know, judgment, basically, if you just take a moment and say, okay, interesting point of view that I have this point of view about me, what else is possible here that I haven't considered? Now, those tools, they're very gentle and they're very easy and they're very pragmatic. And as easy as they are, they actually start to shift the energy, because instead of walking along with these blinkers, kind of like heading in one direction, you've suddenly opened up your vision and you've got a lot more directions that you can go in. And so getting out of that judgment of where you're doing things right, not good enough, could have done it better, why is it always the same thing, anytime that you're judging yourself for that, you're actually stopping for anything greater from showing up, because you're not even allowing yourself to see it, because you're just headed like, you know, a bull that sees red in that direction of judgment. So, you know, when I think the three of us probably have experienced this, but when working with people around the world, it's like getting out of judgment. Once you can start to notice when you're even judging, because a lot of the times we don't even notice, and then say, wow, okay, what else is possible here? Like, interesting point of view that I would be judging myself about this. You know, what's right about this that I'm not getting? And looking for the rightness rather than the wrongness, that really can start to shift it, so that you even allow yourself to try out a lot more different techniques, a lot more different tools, questions, that could really contribute to the change that you're asking for.
Yeah, it's funny, like Christine mentioning things coming up before the call that relate to the call. I just bought a new horse.
Oh, yay! Congratulations.
Yes. Very excited. And I wasn't fully prepared for the level of judgment that would be catapulted on my head.
Oh, wow.
Because he's quite young, and there's all of these things, and all these people have points of view about how you should go forward. I mean, it's just like being a mom, and I'm like, whoa, he's a horse, okay? Like, what's going on here? So I had a little bit of that taste of that, and I didn't fully realize it until you said, like, you know, what if you could just be an interesting point of view about, you know, judging yourself or the judgments coming at you, and I was like, oh. I'm a horse. This is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because I think, like, the sooner, like, we can all kind of, like, start to acknowledge what is true for us in every area of our lives, and particularly in this area too, where there is a lot of judgment about the right way to do things, the wrong way to do things, how even a label of disability is wrong to begin with. And then you should probably fix it or do something to make it more right, even though it's still already wrong. You know, all of these different points of view. What if they are actually just points of view, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And
so, yep, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just thinking, like, what sort of things what tools would you give to, you know, to teachers that are working with kids, you know, with these labels that, you know, obviously you have to negotiate with the school and the kids, but also are aware that these are abilities, not necessary disabilities. Like, what are some of the sort of things that you would say to them if you were talking to them?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that question. And, you know, I think the three of us could talk about this for days on end. It's so huge. And at the same time, I'd say, like, again, going back to the judgment thing, the moment that you just are able to be more the question and be more, you know, kind of having a sense of wonder of, like, okay, so I wonder what is going on for this child. I wonder how they are actually perceiving the world. I wonder how they're receiving information. I wonder how they're receiving colors here. I wonder how they're receiving the shapes, the pictures, the words, the letters, the numbers, the sounds, the light, the shadows, like all of that that we take for granted because we open our eyes and we start worrying rather than really actually acknowledging the gigantic plethora of things we're aware of at any given instant. To them, it's a lot more intense in their world because they are so much more aware. And so even just acknowledging that, acknowledging that they're not wrong and they're not necessarily desiring to be naughty or misbehaving or not getting things, that in itself can create a huge difference. I mean, I'm sure, you know, you both of you have been around somebody who thinks that you're inherently just choosing something wrong or bad or, you know, has judgments about your new horse. You know, like, how easy is it to be yourself under those circumstances? It creates kind of like a not a huge sense of ease, right? It just makes you kind of want to, like, get out of there or rebel against it or kind of fight back or defend yourself or even maybe shrink away and contract. And we're doing the same thing with these kids all the time because communication is not just verbal, and we all know that. And so the more that you can not judge them, the more they will start to sense that in their world, and that will start to create some ease for them as well. And for yourself, because, so, gosh, it takes a lot of energy to be judging everything as, you know, am I doing well enough? Yeah. Am I doing wrong enough? Was that the right thing to say to the child? Was it not? Like, is this actually even working? You know, like...
Well, I wonder too, like, I mean, there's some occasions where, I mean, you can change those molecules, like, and you can ask those questions, and like, when is the time to go, actually, I think I just need to move or change, or like change direction.
Yeah.
Like talking to this young chap yesterday, I mean, he just had this situation where the person that was in charge of the, I don't know what that's called in England, but it's sort of a special needs counselor or whatever. Just, you know, like she just sort of went nuts. And it's like that point, that choice point, I guess, where you go, okay, so is this working, or shall I choose something different? Not from resistance and reaction, which you're saying is often the case of like, I'm packing my bags, I'm out of here.
And, you know, it's so funny because, like, I mean, it's obviously one thing for us to have this conversation and go, yeah, these tools are great. Use them when it gets really difficult. But when stuff gets really difficult, it's really not always the easiest thing to like be like, well, now that I'm furious and I feel hopeless, let me just go to the toolbox. You know, no, you just want to smash the toolbox. So, but even being in allowance of that and even not judging yourself for those moments, that in itself is an enormous tool. Because if you can allow that, then what happens is that you get through it a lot quicker. Like, you know, anything that you're resisting or reacting to or trying to avoid, you're actually just going to be pulling more of that into your world because you're just not letting go of it, basically, in any way.
Right.
So I think, the more you can be an allowance of yourself as you even, like, explore any tools that you're using, whether they're access consciousness ones or, you know, any other tools that are giving you more awareness on what's going on, that can be huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that is such a gift, that being that space of allowance. I remember when I had a tutoring center, I saw the kids changing really fast. And then I started to ask the question, like, what am I doing that's changing all of this? And what I got was it had nothing to do with what I was doing, you know, all the academic stuff. It was that what I was being, which was the space of that no judgment. I really did not look at them as there was something wrong at all. I was more in that, like, let's look at what's right about you and what talents and abilities do you have that nobody else is acknowledging. And there were these kids with amazing capacities to take apart and put together motorcycles, or just they knew a lot about different topics, you know, fish or dinosaurs or something like that. And that really had such a profound effect, or a contribution of change for them, just the space for them to choose something different and to have access to the materials in school that had nothing to do with me tutoring them. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah, that always surprises me. Like, just that being, that allowance and no judgment, they just, like, blossom. And you're like, what did I do?
Absolutely. Because the whole, I mean, I love this so much because the difference between being and doing is huge. And when you're being something, when you're being kind, it can include doing of an action of kindness. And that's great. And sometimes when you're not being kind and you're just doing an act of kindness because you think you have to, it's not actually really being kind, and the other person can perceive it. So it's kind of like if you're working with a child and you're asking them a question because you've decided you have to ask them a question because that's going to empower them, and really you're just annoyed as hell that you've got to ask them that question, and then it comes out as more of a conclusion with a question mark attached. That may not be the best thing, but if you're actually being this space of allowance with them where you're not judging them, you're not judging you, and you're just like, okay, let's see what might show up here. Like, how present can we be with everything that's occurring? And, you know, what question can I ask? Even if no words come out of your mouth, that space that you're being, that energy, is so much easier for them to actually have true choice when they're around you and when they're, you know, with you in the room or wherever or in your house, because you're not actually projecting anything onto them about who they should be, who they're not being, what they're doing, what they shouldn't be doing, you know, all of these millions of things that we do so dynamically.
Well, and the interesting thing is, like you talked about, like not judging yourself. If you do lose it or, you know, go into judgment of them or yourself or whatever. And what I found teaching is that when I did have a moment or three or four or more of you know, unconsciousness or not asking questions, if I actually said to the kids, hey, you know what, I'm sorry, I was an idiot or I wasn't very smart here. You know, I'm wrong. You're right. I'm sorry. And all of a sudden there's this, you have them, like, they're like, wow, like you're a person and you know, you're not infallible. What I found such a huge gift.
Well, and you're being really vulnerable with yourself at that moment as well. And you're acknowledging them as beings too. Like, oh, hey, you do have value and I'm not like the all-knowing guru just because I'm older than you. And that's and that's a huge gift. I mean, you know, some of the teachers that I still remember to this day had that same attitude. They were like, hey, we're all people. I just have more experience. But you, person, even though you're small, like, what do you know about this? You know, and it gave you this sense of like, wow, I could, like, I am somebody and I can create something. And it actually created a connection with that teacher where you knew that they had your back. And it made you even listen to them more because you knew that they knew something. You know, they weren't trying to force it onto you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
One of the questions that I use that I really love is, what contribution can I be? I saw my sessions with kids changed so dynamically when I started to ask that question. There would be kids that I had been working with, and I'd go into the session kind of looking at what was possible for that session. And when I started asking that question, the sessions totally changed the way they showed up. They had nothing to do with what I decided that they needed to do or would get done. And it really just, the sessions flowed with so much more ease and space with that question. And I use that question for everything. With people, what contribution can I be for this person? What kind of contribution can I be to, you know, I ask for the earth and my school. I've told this story a lot, but when I started asking that question on my way to work when I was teaching, I had, in the next 2 days, 4 people come up to me and tell me what a contribution I was to the school. So you just never know how that's going to show up. It's very interesting.
Yeah. And I love that because it's also such a different approach and also not so different because, you know, as a teacher, as a parent, as a family member, as a friend, as a therapist, whatever, you obviously do desire to contribute. Otherwise, you wouldn't be asking these questions and you wouldn't certainly not be listening to this radio show. but at the same time, we're taught that we need to, you know, figure out the result that you want and then just do whatever you can to get that result, which often just doesn't even allow for that to show up because we have such a fixed idea of what that needs to look like. So anything else that might even be better or faster or easier or even more magical than that can't show up for us because we're just not even going to see it. So I love that question because it really just does open it up. Yeah. And it gets you out of being like, okay, if I didn't get this result within the 1 hour class or within the 5 sessions or within 2 days of working with my kid, then I've failed or the tool doesn't work or the kid isn't good enough or the situation is worse than I thought it was. You know, it really takes you out of that and it's like it allows you to be more present with what currently is.
Yeah. So I have a question about exams. Now, you having gone to school in this country. I don't know, did you go to school here as a young child as well, or?
Yeah, I've been in England since I was 3. Yeah, in London I went to school.
Because I'm looking at these exams and things that they have to take, and for a Canadian who didn't have to take exams until she was like 12 or 13, I'm horrified when I see these little kids at, you know, 4 or 5 having to take these exams to let them know how smart or not smart they are. So what have you sort of come across with parents and kids and that can assist with this?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I was very lucky. I obviously wasn't born at a time where we had to do those exams because I have not heard
that was very smart of you.
Doing exams that tiny in England. Yeah. I am, of course, still quite young. I don't mean I'm that old. I'm joking. Well, you know, one of the main things is like there's so much kind of stress created about exams because obviously you have to prove your worth, and really all exams are is just regurgitating information that you've heard. Is it a sign of intelligence? I would say that's debatable. I'd say it's a sign of great memory. That's just my interesting point of view. I mean, what I always look at with the parents is how can you create it so that your child is actually as calm as they require so that they can actually access all the information that they have. They may recall it. They may remember it. They may suddenly, you know, whatever, have an epiphany. Who knows? Or they may suddenly just remember a lot more while they're studying rather than worrying about what they're studying about, what they're trying to study, you know. And so the first tool that I always give that creates so much ease, and I know you guys have worked a lot with this too, is the access bars, which is literally 32 points on the head that when you touch them, it creates an electromagnetic discharge of the thoughts, feelings, and emotions that we have. So all the thoughts of, oh, my God, I can't do this. Can I do it? Can I not? Will I remember? All the feelings and emotions that come up about all of that. Your body literally gets rid of them when you touch these points because it's basically just a push button system and your body doesn't have a point of view about it. So running kids bars during exam time, before exams, while they're studying, you know, a session for a child can be like 20 minutes long. For adults, it's nice to do an hour to 90 minutes. That actually creates so much peace and ease in their universe where their body is actually able to let go of that polarity again of like good, bad, right, wrong, you know, and it just starts to create a lot more space. And there's been so many kids that have had their bars run before an exam and gone in and done great without having studied a lot. So yeah, it works and it's amazing. And the kids seem to love it as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's really not about them not having the information. It's what's getting in the way of them accessing the information.
Absolutely.
Which is so much of that stress and tight and or even just perceiving what's going on with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, so I would say that. And also just really, like, I mean, kids are really smart. And they're very pragmatic. Like, so if you give them a question or a tool, like, okay, what do I know here? Or even a tool, like, what does the teacher require me to write down in this exam? What do they require to hear? That kind of takes the significance out of it, so it then becomes a little bit funny. That can make it so much easier for them to write. I mean, I was always terrible at, for example, English and English literature just because there were so many words I couldn't even get my head around it. But I remember going into exams when I was a teenager and, you know, we were supposed to have read Macbeth and all these different books that I never really read. And I remember going in there and just kind of being like, okay, what do I need to write down to get a good grade? Like, you know, I'd kind of just like given up. And so I was just being a bit cheeky and just asking these silly questions. Also, I thought in my head, but actually it took the significance and the stress out of having to do it right. and it allowed me to actually really remember some key bits from conversations and classes, because, you know, you are present in the class. Like Christine said, like, it's not about them not having the information. It's about them accessing it and, you know, getting away all the other stuff that's in the way. So that can be a great question. There's a lot of kids that I know that have used that question. Like, okay, what does the teacher require here from me? Like, what would they like me to write down? Like, you know, and that actually just kind of accesses a different level of information.
I remember I played this game with when Christine and I were working at the Access Possibility School of Teachers, and it was with English, and I had all kinds of different levels in there. Some kids that should have been in college, some kids that, you know, were struggling with, you know, a few grades below, even though they were supposed to be a few grades higher. And we would take a word, and they weren't allowed to look it up. And they had to tell me, just using their awareness, what they thought that word meant. And there was no right or wrong answer. And then they, we all looked up the word, or somebody looked up the word. And then we had to take whatever word they had chosen and make a sentence with what the word actually meant. And so we did this over a period of probably 6 months or more. And it got to the point where they could look at it, and just by the pattern of the word and the sense of the word, they could usually tell you right off what it meant without having to look it up.
That's amazing.
And so just practicing. It was really, and it was really fun. There was no stress. There was no, you know what I mean? So
yeah. Well, and that's brilliant. And if you look at that also moving forward, like, one of the things that I'm, you know, I really just kind of like am big on is really like giving these kids the tools that they can actually go out and create their lives in the future, whatever that may be. Is, you know, not so much about, you know, getting through the next exam or getting through whatever, or, you know, and I know that for most teachers and parents, obviously, it's exactly the same thing. But what I love about what you're doing there, Simone, as well, is like, imagine then somebody who maybe has been labeled with autism spectrum disorder and going out into the work world and suddenly remembering that exercise and being able to navigate, you know, conversations and meetings in a far more dynamic way because they had that experience with you rather than having to like get it right or wrong, or did they like memorize all of the terms before walking into the meeting, you know?
Well, and it gives them a sense of wonder and curiosity about the world rather than, you know, doing that, you know, by rote memory work that is, like, how many of us remember any of that stuff, like, after the exam?
Not at all. Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
Diva, would you talk about behaviors that some children exhibit, like flapping of hands, which I was just with a little boy for a few days at a family reunion who is on the spectrum, the autism spectrum, and I heard somebody say, you know, he's stimming. So how would you respond to that? What could you tell people about that, and what information do you have?
Well, stimming, as you probably know if you have ever looked into what it is usually done to create a sense of just kind of like more peace, even though it doesn't look that way, for the person. With access, what we found is that actually really getting them to acknowledge what they're perceiving in that moment is what's going to get them out of it. I know that for me, when I was a lot younger, I would do certain things that luckily I was never diagnosed when I was young. And I say luckily in the sense that I would be a very different person, I'm sure. But, you know, I would do certain things that would be classed as stimming. And it really was in those moments to deal with the intensity of everything that I was aware of, that I didn't even know was aware of. It was just kind of like this intense energy. And so a question that always helps with that is, what are you perceiving? What are you aware of? Just to kind of get them into that thing of like, hey, you know, like, what are you aware of? That is, this isn't actually you. Like, what are you aware of? And even asking them, like, where's it coming from? Like, point to where it's coming from. And, you know, I mean, these tools are completely different. They are completely, you know, a new way of looking at it. But it actually gets them to go, oh, it's coming from all around me, like outside of me. And that can create a lot of ease with the stimming as well, so that they don't feel that they have to just kind of like, you know, deal with all of that awareness, all of that energy, all of that information there. Because to you, you may be at a wedding, at a gathering, and you may think the music is lovely and all of that. But to somebody with autism, the music can be almost piercing with intensity, and the conversations, even the whispers, can be so loud, and the breeze on your skin and the clothes and the way that they feel and, you know, all of it, like, really, like, their kind of, like, sensorial experience, if you like, of the world is probably, like, 1,000 times more intense than it is for the average person. So even just acknowledging that and saying, hey, like, what are you perceiving? What are you aware of? Okay, yeah, it is the music, it is all these people, it is people kind of like stressed, it is like all of this commotion and moving around. That really, really just does create a huge ease, I've found.
Yeah. Thank you. That's
well, then
awesome.
What I've noticed lately is it can be stemming, but it also can be shutting down too. Like that sort of like withdrawal,
exactly.
which I've noticed. Lately, or kids that have like mobile devices or whatever, they'll just like suck themselves into it, or adults as well. And it's interesting that you say about the senses, because for myself, if it gets too hot, that's when I go into that overwhelm. Whereas,
interesting.
Like, with my boyfriend, it's that noise, it's that stress, it's that, you know, like being in a restaurant, he really doesn't like it.
And I completely understand that. I mean, for me, sounds they can be excruciating, particularly certain pitches of people's voices, even though they're talking normally, can be like a knife to the brain. What I noticed that I used to do when I was young was just count everything, count every syllable that was being said over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And I realize now that I do that when it does get that kind of intense and I'm not really acknowledging that that's what's happening. So I'll just be you know. And so at those moments, that's when I like to use the tool as well. Everything is the opposite of what it appears to be, and nothing is the opposite of what it appears to be. And if you just repeat that over and over, and you can even say that in your head to somebody, and it just creates more of a sense of peace, for you and then for everyone around you as well. But that literally takes you out of like the cognitive. And it takes you out of that kind of like merry-go-round that we can get on in our heads that is just going over and over and over. And so that's a really cool one. But also, like you said, Simone, earlier as well, expanding out, because I think so much of what we're taught to do is like protect ourselves, quote unquote, and just kind of like be in your own space. And the smaller you are, like the safer it's going to be, because no one's going to get to you. But actually the opposite is true. The more spacious you are and the more space you can encompass, even in your awareness and in your mind. I mean, I'm not talking about kind of like floating around like this ethereal being, although you can, of course, but I mean like just, you know, rather than kind of like contracting and, like you said, just kind of going onto your phone, if that's not working for you or for your kids or whatever, literally just ask them to like expand their zone out and, you know, maybe be like, oh, hey, check out those trees over there. Oh, I wonder how many animals there are in this direction. Oh, look at that flock of birds that just flew by, you know, and just getting them to expand out will make them kind of like bigger than everything, so that they remember that they're not these little limited things, but they are these infinite beings that have a lot more possibilities, and they're just very, very aware of information in a very different way than other people.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
So we have about 6 minutes or so left, and so we wanted to leave some time for you to talk about what you're doing and what's coming up and how people can get more information about this topic.
Wow, thank you. So I am the creative producer for one of the specialty classes in Access Consciousness that you can all check out, which is called X-Men. And we really look at everything that is labeled as a disability and how it's actually an ability. And so I'm doing classes all over the world. You can find out more on if you go to xmenabilities.com, that's my website. And also if you go to accessconsciousness.com/X-Men, you'll see all of the upcoming classes. We have brand new introductory facilitators, so they will be giving intro classes, which just means shorter classes, all over the world. They are amazing, amazing people who work in all different areas of life. So some of them are therapists, some of them are parents, some of them just have a lot of these things themselves, so they're speaking from that point of view, a lot like me. And, you know, so we offer those classes everywhere and online. You can find out more, there, at accessconsciousness.com.
Cool. Yeah. And there's also a Facebook group, too, isn't there? The X-Men Facebook group, is that right?
That's right. And that one is called, there's X-Men Abilities, there's Access X-Men. There's a couple of them on there. So if you just type in the search Access and X-Men, you'll have a bunch of stuff come up. So check it out. There's some interesting conversations in those groups and pages where, you know, people ask questions. We post articles, sound clips, tools. So you can really kind of like actually start to implement a lot of this stuff before even getting to a class if that's what you're interested in. So yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much.
Lots of tools.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Thank you both.
And so any last words before we go? Simone or Diva?
If you could give parents or kids or teachers, like, you know, just one thing, like a question or your favorite question or something that you use every day that you really love.
Yeah. You know, a really cool question that you can ask as well is, if you were being you, who would you be right now? And what would you choose? Because so often what these kids are being is literally what they've seen, what they've learned, what is expected of them, what is hoped that they will not be, you know, depending on how rebellious they're feeling that day. So literally just asking them that gets them to acknowledge, like, oh, maybe this isn't actually me. Is this my best choice? And really also asking them the question, okay, so if you choose that, what will that create? Okay, so if you choose to break that thing, what's that going to create? If you choose to, you know, be kind to your sister, what will that create? Because that's really starting to empower them to know that every choice that they make actually creates something. That, you know, they're the ones that are choosing that. It's not all based on adults telling them what to do. And the more we can start to kind of put that awareness in kids from a really, really young age, the more empowered adults we're going to end up with. And that's what I'm interested in, you know, like a whole generation of leaders of all kinds. And I really do believe that these kids have a lot to offer. They have a whole different awareness. They have a whole different way of being in the world, which really isn't based on judgment. So the sooner that we can recognize that and we can use that as a way of showing them, like, hey, you might just be different. You're not wrong. But, you know, what if you don't have to judge just because everyone else does? You know, then that already starts to create a different possibility for them, for what they can choose.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah, thank you. What a gift. What a gift, people. Thank you so much, Diva. And thanks, Simone.
Yeah,
and
next week we'll
be joined by Lisa Hendrickson. She is going to talk about being you and being happy. So how does it get better than that?
That's good.
Yay. Sounds fun.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being with us. Bye.
Thanks.